In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the police, who investigate crime, and the Crown prosecutors, who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
Law and Order UK. Construction work is going on in the basement of a house.
No. We can't finish any sooner. I'm not a miracle worker. Hey, if I was a miracle worker, I'd be on a pleasure boat in Hawaii.
It's full of workers.
Hello? Bloody developer, put the phone down on me.
Derek, come here. There's something you should see.
The guy who's been knocking a hole in the wall nods to the hole. The guy who was on the phone, Yarek, wanders over with a concerned expression. They peer through at fragments of a human skeleton. Ronnie and Matt go under police tape around the house.
And how long's it been empty?
About a year.
Have you owned it before?
Council.
They make their way down the garden path with Yarek. They head downstairs into the basement. Some of the bones are in plastic trays. A socko holds the skull.
Young, 8 to 9.
He puts it in a tray.
Poor kid. So what happened? They crawling over the top and falling.
Massive skull fracture, more likely a hit. Not a gentle cuff around the ear either.
Boy or girl?
Male.
How long's he been in there?
Matt, Ogler stand badge. I've got one of these. That's original. Kid's been in there for over 20 years.
Ronnie holds up an evidence bag with the West Ham badge inside. Images of London are overlaid by shots of the show's characters in action. Law, square-jawed Bradley Walsh as DS Ronnie Brooks. Lean and handsome Jamie Bamber as DS Matt Devlin. Short, dark-haired Harriet Walter as DI Natalie Chandler. Order, 40-something Ben Daniels as James Steele. Pretty brown-eyed Freema Agyeman as Alicia Phillips. Both of them appear talking animatedly in court. And suited Bill Patterson as George Castle. Law and Order UK. Buried, teleplay by Catherine Tregenna. In the police offices, photos and maps are stuck on the board.
Could be a mum and dad out there still hoping their son's alive.
When I first joined CID, the first week, we had a young girl go missing. She was 10. Her name was Shona Morris. I still catch myself looking for her now.
Who lived in that house?
Before 1995, it was privately owned. There's no list of tenants.
We need to know who this poor boy is. Get Angie onto it.
Merlin database. All missing children from 1981 to 1984.
Oh, that is a lot of kids.
There are 200 open cases just from last year. Press only featured the pretty ones.
Male. 8 years old. Reported missing July 16th, 1983. Thomas Keegan.
59 Kenville Road. Same street the body was found.
Says he had a broken collarbone.
Well, we're already checking with a database for missing kids with similar injuries.
Mother Philippa Keegan. Arthur Keegan was the dad, but he died the year before, 1982.
How many losses can one woman take?
Dad was born 1939, Upton Park, he's 15.
So his dad got him into the Hammers.
Sorry?
West Ham. Commonly known as the Hammers, because they keep getting hammered.
Watch it, sunshine.
Investigating officer D.S.
McFadden. I'm fluent and illegible.
Oh, and if you look at the last page, they had a suspect, Edward Connor. Oh.
She turns to a photo.
Devlin, yeah. The boy in the wall. Had a broken collarbone. That's brilliant, thank you very much.
That's him. Tracked down Geoffrey McFadden.
Came on.
With Geoffrey by a canal.
So this is what retired old Bill get up to, is it?
Bet you can't wait.
So anyway, Jeff, this old case of yours, mate.
Missing child, 1983.
Keegan, 8 years old, blue eyes, brown hair, broken collarbone, West Ham supporter.
Blimey, sounds like you just read the file.
You ever done a missing kid?
Stays with you, doesn't it?
Now the case is alive again.
We found Thomas.
Tommy.
Tommy. Bones in a basement inside a fireplace opposite his home.
Where the poof that lived?
Sorry?
Edward Connor.
You mean the suspect from the file?
He was the last one to see the boy alive. He's mucking about with him on the steps. An hour later, Connor goes for a drive. He did it, but we couldn't nail him, despite going over the boot of his car with a fine tooth comb. He couldn't tell me where he'd been or who he was with that night. I was sure he'd taken Tommy in the boot of his car for his own sick pleasure.
Well, you might have been better off searching the house.
We did, smart ass.
Jeff, sir.
Craggy-faced Jeff turns to Ronnie.
Where can we find Edward Connor?
Moved out, changed his name, went off radar. Now, if that isn't a sign of guilt, what is?
Forensic evidence, maybe? A corpse?
OK. So we missed the corpse, but we had the right guy.
Matt nods and smirks, then heads off.
OK, so we missed the corpse. OK, so you're probably the crappiest copper I've ever met.
It's just a product of his time, Matt.
What, there were no good detectives back then?
Oh, yeah, you're talking to one. Like I keep telling you, I am special.
So what now? We've got to go find Edward Connor, even though he's changed his name?
Well, yeah, but first we need to talk to Tommy's mum, because thanks to that bigoted little prat, she probably hasn't slept in 25 years.
Home of Philippa Keegan, Clapham, Wednesday, 28th of January. They stand in the kitchen.
Are you sure it's him?
Philippa stands with her back to them.
As sure as we can be, ma'am. Yeah.
Matt lowers his gaze. Philippa cries.
I've been waiting for this.
Her face is screwed up in misery.
A part of me still thought
he was still out there.
She nods her head.
I know. I'm sorry.
Shaking with sobs, she looks down.
We're actually looking for Edward Connor, Mrs. Keegan. If you remember, at the time he was a suspect.
I didn't think it was him. But if Tommy was found in the basement...
Let me get you a tissue, ma'am.
Well, then I hope you don't mind if I ask you what you remember about that day.
I dropped him off at school.
Matt makes notes.
Didn't kiss him. Didn't want to embarrass him.
Ronnie's eyes are full of sadness.
It was my teacher training day, so he was going to a friend's for tea. Because it was just the two of us, you see, because his dad died the year earlier. When I came to pick him up, Joe's mum called them in. But Joe said they'd argued and Tommy had gone home. And I said not to worry, because we only lived a few streets away and Tommy was really good at crossing roads. And the key was under the mat.
Matt looks up at Philippa. Skinny, pale Philippa, around 60, weeps silently again, her shoulders heaving.
But he wasn't at home. I tried the neighbours. And then I called the police. I remember saying to them, I'm sure it's nothing, he'll be back any second.
Ronnie stares ahead.
I stayed in that house for 20 years.
She nods gently.
You know, just in case.
Her eyes are filled with pain. Matt glances down. Matt looks over at a couple of framed photos of Tommy, one with a rosary hanging over it. Ronnie and Matt stroll along by the Thames.
How can she still believe in God after what happened?
You won't be lighting a candle for little Tommy, then?
A couple of young women jog past.
You already have, haven't you?
Once a Catholic.
Don't suppose it does any harm to throw in the odd prayer, eh?
At the police offices.
Well, at the moment, we're still trying to track down the previous tenants of Kenville Road.
25 years, people move on.
Thank you very much, Janie. You are an angel. Thanks, bye. OK, we've got a trace. Vernon Mortimer works on pensions, says that he retired to Pimlico in 2005, so there's a chance he could have stayed in touch with Edward Connor.
Let's hope he's in.
Stimpery Mansions, Pimlico.
Vernon's not in. Moved out about a year ago, according to the caretaker. That for me? Yeah. Cheers.
Right. Like chasing ghosts, isn't it?
But he left his flat to his daughter, who works around the corner in, and I quote, one of them overpriced poncy little flower gaffs.
In the florists.
You grew up in Kenville Road, Ladbroke Grove.
Yeah. What's this about?
She frowns.
A little boy.
He shows her a photo of Tommy.
Do you remember him?
Yeah, that's Tommy. He was my friend. He disappeared.
We recently found his remains in the basement of the building in which you grew up.
God,
No, that's horrible.
What do you remember about the day he went missing?
Such a long time ago.
Well, we know that Tommy went to his friend Joe's house after school.
Yeah, that's right, because I think I wanted to go with them. But my mum wouldn't let me. I don't think I was very well. I know I played outside the house for a while. My mum was going out, I think. And then I got into my pajamas, and Dad made me some tea, tomato soup and Dairy Lee sandwiches.
Well remembered.
Well, no, he always made me that if I was ill or upset. And then I went to bed, and I didn't wake up until Mum told me that the police wanted to talk to me. And that was the next morning, so... No, I didn't see Tommy.
What about Edward Connor? Lived in the flat upstairs, publisher. Remember him?
No, I didn't see him either. Sorry.
His brow lined, Ronnie nods.
Well, we'd like to talk to your parents.
Oh, they moved out of London a year ago. They live in Lewes.
Well, Lewes is lovely.
Is it? I don't know. I've never been.
She clips leaves off a stalk nervously. Ronnie smiles and nods.
It shook us all. Thomas was a sweet boy. He only lost his dad the year before. Julia wasn't well. You went out, right?
To the PTA meeting, yes. When I left at about 5:30, Thomas was with Edward Connor outside on the steps. But I said all this in my statement.
Yeah, but we now know that Tommy was probably killed inside the building. So, I mean, we still have to...
It's your job, yeah. Of course.
We're trying to track Connor down. He's changed his name.
To Ralph Drake, yes, I know. And he wrote several children's books under that pseudonym. Oh, I kept tabs on him down the years. We all knew it was him.
I told her there was no proof.
Edward Connor was a volunteer at St. Peter's Church Youth Group.
Oh, don't miss again.
And 3 months after Thomas disappeared, he was accused of propositioning a 12-year-old boy there. Well, I call that proof, don't you? Just make sure you get him this time.
Matt raises his eyebrows. He glances at Ronnie. Home of Ed Connor.
That cheeky little bastard who made the complaint. He knew that I'd been arrested over Tommy's disappearance and wanted attention. He retracted it soon after, and no one wanted to hear that. Because all gays abuse kids, as you know.
Well, I think we both know that most child abusers are straight, don't we, Mr. Connor? So why don't you tell us about the day Tommy disappeared?
Why should I?
Because we're trying to get to the truth.
Slim, grey-haired Connor's drying cutlery.
Deja vu.
Ronnie and Matt eye him.
We chatted outside on the steps. I went in and left him playing football. I came out a bit later to go for a drive and he was gone.
Is that all?
No, I forgot. Before that, I took him down to the basement, tortured him and killed him.
That's not funny, Mr. Connor.
Neither's being hauled off the street for no reason. And kept in a cell for 3 days while some rat-faced detective kicks the shit out of me.
McFadden.
He only stopped when he drew blood and I told him I had AIDS. I couldn't give him an alibi. My lover was married. Gays had never been so unpopular. After all, we brought in the plague.
Well, it's not like that now, sir.
No. No, I'd get $100,000 compensation. Then I got 3 broken ribs and a black eye.
In the offices at the police station...
McFadden has persecuted Edward Connor and took his eye completely off the ball.
Sucker can't find any crime stains to reanalyse.
This should have been solved back then, you know. Thanks to McFadden, we've got absolutely nothing to go on.
I think I'll go home and cuddle my boys. Which they'll hate, of course.
Good night, Gov.
Night.
Wait. Listen to this. Mum picked me up from school. I played outside the house for a bit, but I was feeling ill because of my cold. Mum was going out, so I got into my pyjamas and Dad made me tea, tomato soup and Dairy Lee sandwiches. Then I went to bed. I didn't wake till Mum told me the police wanted to speak to me. That was the next morning. Does that ring any bells?
Well, yeah, it's the statement we took from Julia Mortimer this afternoon.
Wrong. It's the statement Jeff McFadden took in 1983. It's practically word for word.
Mum.
Well, what do you make of it?
Well, Maybe Tommy going missing was so traumatic for her. That day was etched on her brain forever.
No, because to her, the trauma didn't occur until the next day. The night before was just a normal night. She didn't even know there was anything to witness then.
Or a story to perfect.
She's lying.
Fleur du jour, Pimlico, Monday 2nd of February. A man leaves as Ronnie and Matt enter. The man carries a huge bouquet.
Well, what's he done wrong?
Well, I take it you're not here to buy flowers.
Maybe in a few weeks for Tommy's funeral. But we need to solve the case first.
Well, I've told you what I know.
You told us exactly what you told the police in 1983.
Yeah, because that's what happened.
Well, not quite, Julia. Because one of your ex-neighbours told us that she saw you with Tommy. Yet you told us you hadn't seen him.
Well, it was a long time ago.
Which is why we'd like to take a few hours now going over that day.
Listen, I was 8 years old, OK? I don't want to go back to that day. Now, I am really sorry about Tommy, but it's in the past.
Tell that to his mother.
Matt smiles coldly. Julia stares wide-eyed.
Julia.
No, I'm sorry. I'm very busy. I've got work to do.
I'd take that as a no.
I'd take that as a sign that she's got something to hide.
Office of Dr. Elizabeth Rules, Monday.
It's possible someone told her what to say.
She witnessed something and was sworn to secrecy.
Not necessarily. As a child, you can be coaxed into believing an alternative version of events. If what she witnessed was traumatic, then the real memory could have been repressed because it's just too hard to process.
So she doesn't know what she's hiding?
She shrugs.
What can we do?
Rawls thinks.
We could try EMDR.
And come again?
It's a process that involves the patient following an object with their eyes.
Oh, he's good at that.
It's used to treat post-traumatic stress sufferers, Bosnia 9/11, Oklahoma bombings.
It helps with the healing. It's also used to help stimulate the processing system and retrieve lost memories.
At the offices...
Oh, I don't know, sounds like a lot of old mumbo-jumbo to me, hypnotising.
EMDR is not hypnosis, Ronnie, it's a form of psychotherapy. And if Dr. Rawls thinks it's a good idea, I believe her. Anyway, it's not like we've got a whole bag full of other options.
All right. I've got to be honest, I ain't sleeping well because I'm wondering what Tommy Keegan's mum's going through, and if it's going to give her a little bit of peace, it is worth having a go. But first, you're going to have to convince Julia Mortimer.
Fleur du jour, Tuesday, 3rd of February.
I don't have any buried memories.
How would you know?
She rolls her eyes.
Dr. Rawls can help you remember what really happened. She's used the technique before with good results.
Julia sprays flowers with water.
A nice flowers, Julia?
Gladioli. Knights used to wear the roots under their armour for protection.
Maybe we should try it.
She glares at him. He smiles.
You are our only hope. We would like to find out who killed your friend.
She looks down and sags.
But it's your choice, Julia.
Ronnie takes a card from his wallet and leaves it on the countertop.
Why don't you ever think about it?
Ronnie nods and smiles. Julia takes the card. Ronnie and Matt head out.
Keep seeing Tommy's face. Frightened. Crying. Calling out my name, and I don't know if it's my imagination or if I'm remembering it.
She looks back at them.
Could she help me with that?
Office of Dr. Elizabeth Rawls, EMDR Session 1, Thursday 5th of February. Green lights flash on a horizontal yellow stick. Julia follows the lights with her eyes.
Mum got cross because I'd been to the shop and bought sweets. She found them in my pencil case. Called me her little liar. I went out onto the street.
Rawls observes her intently. Julia bites her lip.
I did see Tommy. He waved at me. Threw his ball for me to catch. Mum told me to come back indoors.
I was getting into bed when the doorbell rang. It was Tommy.
Ronnie and Matt watch a recording.
He wanted to make sure I was okay.
Matt pauses it.
Verna never mentioned Tommy calling round.
Tommy didn't stay. Julia's dad sent him away. Then she went to bed. I keep getting her to the point where she remembers waking up, but I can't get her beyond that.
Well, this is getting us nowhere slowly, guys.
Give it a chance. She's shutting down for a reason.
I can't do this to order. Sometimes it takes years.
EMDR Session 7.
I woke up. Wanted my dad. I looked for him everywhere. I kept calling out for him. He must have gone out.
Julia's eyes follow the flashing lights. Her lip quivers.
I'm scared.
What did you do, Julia?
I went out of the flat.
Keep looking at the light.
She drops her head and closes her eyes.
You went out of the flat.
Julia looks at the lights again. She narrows her eyes.
The basement light was on. I could see it through a crack in the door. I walked towards it. And I opened the door.
Oh, God, can we stop? It's okay.
Please.
You're safe. You're doing so well, Julia. Keep going.
She focuses on the lights again.
You opened the door.
She nods and purses her lips.
I went down the stairs.
She narrows her eyes.
My dad was there. With his back to me, I was so glad to see him.
Her face falls.
Oh, God. What's wrong?
Her lip trembles.
It's Tommy. He's got blood on his head and his hair, and he's not moving.
Where is he, Julia?
Julia's face creases up in misery.
He's on the ground, at my dad's feet.
Office of James Steele.
It's Tommy. He's got blood on his head and his hair, and he's not moving.
Where is he, Julia?
He's on the ground, at my dad's feet.
A tear rolls down her cheek. James and Alicia are watching the video of Julia.
What do you think?
She's not faking it. She didn't want to remember. It took 7 sessions to get her there. She's telling the truth.
Yeah, but will a jury believe her? Building a case on this evidence, it all hinges on Julia Mortimer being a credible witness.
She at least deserves the chance to be heard.
James raises his brows and shakes his head.
I'll talk to her. Why are you estranged from your parents?
Dad's always interfering. Every time one of my relationships falls apart, he gloats. And when my last marriage ended, I couldn't face him.
Must be tough on your mum.
Dad's her world. No one else matters.
Alicia nods.
Why did your marriage end?
My husband cheated on me.
Hardly your dad's fault.
Julia narrows her eyes.
Was your father violent to you?
No. I mean, even that night when he talked me through the story, he wasn't angry. He was crying.
She shakes her head.
Sorry for himself.
You hate your dad, don't you?
No.
You hated him long before you allegedly remember what he did.
She glances at Alicia.
I thought you believed me.
This is a vendetta against him, isn't it, Miss Mortimer? You're doing this to punish him. A man who's shown you nothing but love all your life.
He terrified me. He kept telling me about all the bad men out there, and all the time I was holding the bad man's hand. I grew up with my best friend rotting in the basement. Yes, I want him punished for what he did to Tommy.
She stares James in the eye.
Thank you. I apologize. I hope you understand why I had to do that.
Julia looks at Alicia in disbelief.
Now we build a case.
George's office.
No jury will buy it. Julia's evidence is nothing if not backed up by some hard facts.
OK, so we get everything we can on Mortimer as quietly as possible. Find out why he might attack and kill a small boy so that we can corroborate what she saw.
If we don't do this, that's it. Philippa Keegan will live the rest of her life knowing that her son's murderer was never brought to justice. The system failed her once. We can't let that happen again.
Night, outside the Old Bailey.
James, you're never going to believe this. Doug Greer, Mortimer's lawyer, called. He's coming in with the Mortimers tomorrow. Julia rang her father and told him what she's doing.
Why the hell would she do that?
She was angry. Ranting, according to Greer. I mean, you wound her up and sent her off.
It's a lie. I don't know why she's doing this.
Look on the net at all the forums for people with fake memories. All around the world, young women on couches blaming their eating disorders on some fabricated crises from their past. Innocent parents accused, left, right and centre. Just like my client. It's my duty to look at the facts.
Yes, but you don't know our daughter, Mr. Steele. She has a habit of running off with unsuitable men who bleed her dry. We pick up the pieces. All her life, Vern's done nothing but take care of her. She lives in our flat rent-free. He pays the lease on her shop, and this is how she thanks him.
She's not herself, Catherine. You don't know how suggestible she is. I'm worried sick about her.
James eyes him.
Look at me. Are you really going to put me through this?
James wears a wry smile.
I'm not saying you're guilty. I'm saying there's a case worth prosecuting. Then the jury can decide.
Yes, but it'll ruin us.
It'll ruin the reputation of the CPS first. A 25-year-old case that doesn't dignify the word evidence. And a witness with zero credibility.
The defense lawyer, Greer, scoffs.
You might want to think about that.
Greer, Vernon and Catherine head out.
Thank you.
Greer holds open the door for them. He glances back at James, who smiles at him. Alicia enters, sharing an awkward look with Greer.
Unbelievable. If your husband had been accused of murdering a child, would you sit there and talk about your reputation? Tell me you got something.
Ladbroke Grove Life and Casualty. Mortimer got sacked in 1986. I've spoken to five people on the phone. No one will tell me why.
Doorstep, then.
Ladbroke Grove Life and Casualty.
After you.
Thank you.
Do take a seat.
Chief Executive Officer back then. You must have been rather young.
And upwardly mobile. Got a lot to thank old Maggie for, eh?
I had my first alcoholic drink the day she resigned. Asti Spumanti. Our estate celebrated for a week.
How very urban.
Vernon Mortimer. Did you know him well?
He was a good salesman. Vernon could sell fire insurance to Eskimos even after a long liquid lunch.
Then why did you sack him?
We all have our demons.
What were his demons?
He looks away.
Is it to do with young boys?
The man, Elliot Woods, takes off his glasses and sits down.
I'm investigating the murder of a child.
Woods turns to meet her gaze. She stares at him imploringly. Woods frowns.
We did a job once in Birmingham. On the way back, the train stopped at Highwick. He went to the loo. I went to the bar and had a few too many. Next thing I know, he's with some policeman. A 13, 14-year-old boy said Vern had made a pass at him.
In a garage.
More than 20 years ago now. It wasn't just him. I was experimenting. Gave him a come on and then I lost my bottle.
What exactly did he do?
He offered me £20. There was something in his eyes, though, like he hated himself for doing it. I turned him down. He grabbed my arm and said, all right, I'll give you 50 then, you little shit. I kicked him and ran. Funny thing was, they were out there in the daylight. He just looked sad. Kept saying, I'm sorry. Even tried to give me the 50 quid. A policeman called him a sick, disgusting man. He took a statement.
The case never went to trial.
My parents suspected I was gay, but I didn't want the neighbours knowing I was hanging around in station toilets.
So they wouldn't let you give evidence?
They took me to see a shrink instead. She said it's not about sex when it's adults with kids, it's about power. Somebody they can control.
The judge won't allow Kevin Jackson's evidence. It was sexual conduct rather than violence, which is what we're prosecuting. Any application on that basis is bound to fail.
But the sexual abuse probably led to the violence.
Oh, we can fill in the gaps all that we like, but that's not the way that the law works. No. It's time to let this go.
Oh, we can't.
Julia Mortimer will go into the witness box with nothing to back her up. Her dear old dad is an elderly pillar of the community.
Who was 39, strong and dangerous back then. That's how we must see the man who did this, not as some frail old pensioner.
Yeah, but that's what he'll look like to the jury. I'm sorry, it's just not worth the risk, James.
My son is 8, the same age as Tommy. No parent would say this wasn't worth the risk. Philippa Keegan has suffered enough,
George. And should be spared the pain of a trial.
But
I'm a dad too, remember.
James and Alicia exchange glances.
Hello, Castle. Just a second. It's Dr. Rawls.
It came back to her in our session this morning.
On a video.
Dad would come into my room at night, read me a story,
he'd lie on the bed, touch me, kiss me on the lips, stroke me under my nightdress.
Watching Julia cries, James looks down.
I told my mum, and she said that if I told anyone else that I would never see my dad again. That's when it stopped.
Rawls switches off the tape.
It's my fault. He couldn't have me, so he moved on to Tommy.
James is pale, his brow furrowed. In case management hearing.
Mr. Mortimer, you stand charged on this indictment with murder. How do you plead, guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
Is the defendant on bail?
Yes, my lady, with a number of conditions. He's lodged a surety in the sum of £30,000, surrendered his passport, and is subject to daily reporting at Lewes Police Station.
Bail as before.
Vernon and Catherine exchange distressed glances. Julia storms into James's office at the CPS.
I want to withdraw from the trial.
You can't. We've come too far. We've built the case.
But this is killing him. My mother said he's losing his mind.
She's trying to manipulate you, Julia, just like she's always done.
He's my dad. He's 65. He will die in jail.
He killed an 8-year-old child. You walk away now, he will never be brought to justice for what he did to Tommy, to you.
Do you know, I was better off not knowing.
Tommy's mother is on her way over right now. Please, Julia, wait.
Julia marches out. She meets Philippa.
I didn't realise you had an appointment.
Julia just showed up.
Philippa stands up and studies Julia. Philippa smiles sadly.
I'm so sorry about Tommy.
You were joined at the hip, you two, weren't you? Used to pay weddings with my old veil. I would love to have seen him married.
Don't, please. I'm not sure I can do this.
Philippa's bright blue eyes dart about. She gently strokes Julia's hair.
Your father held me when I cried. He drove me round and round, day and night, searching. And all the time he knew.
Julia weeps.
Do you know Tommy wouldn't go down to that basement on his own because he said there was a monster down there?
Philippa's lip trembles. She looks into Julia's eyes.
It was, wasn't it?
Julia nods.
Yeah.
You've got to help me.
Philippa gazes at her desperately and Julia nods, still silently sobbing. Crown v. Mortimer, trial day one, Monday 6th of April. Outside, Greer catches up to James.
Tell me, James, exactly how much research have you done on your key? Oh, sorry, only witness. I believe her and the jury will too. Not when they hear where she spent her summer holiday last year. Little clue. Staff wear white coats. Let's go.
In court.
Tommy was 7 when his father died of leukemia. And that brought us closer.
Did your son have a relationship with the defendant?
Yes. Mr. Mortimer started helping us out after my husband died.
And what did you personally witness in this relationship?
He'd arranged treats for him. He took him to see West Ham play. Tommy's dad used to support them.
Ronnie creeps in.
Once he came home with one of the players' autographs, and I remember thinking that at least he had a father figure.
Vernon hangs his head.
Thank you, Mrs. Keegan. No further questions.
Greer stands in his wig.
Did you tell the police about my client's relationship with your son?
No.
So it didn't seem unusual to you?
It's the strangers you worry about, not the nice man over the road.
And if you were as close as you claim, then surely you would have noticed if something was wrong.
Yes. No. Because I trusted Vernon, Mr. Mortimer.
And continued to do so, until this hysterical notion was planted.
If I'd have known, I would have kept him away.
Well, maybe there was nothing to know. No further questions.
Outside the court, Greer walks up to James, Ronnie and Philippa.
You do know I'll demolish Julia Mortimer in the witness box tomorrow. She's a mess, James.
You're right. She's long since learned not to trust her own mind. Tomorrow might well break her.
That's
That's not what I want.
If he cared for her, he'd confess.
How can you say I don't care? I love my daughter.
Don't get involved. If you're looking for absolution from me, you're not going to get it.
I'm a good man. I've worked hard all my life.
James sneers and turns away.
Don't you walk away from me!
James marches off.
You don't know me!
Crown v. Mortimer, trial day 4, Thursday 9th of April. In court.
Tell me about the day Thomas Keegan disappeared.
The barristers wear white wigs.
I saw him outside the house briefly. Later on, he came to the door. I thought my dad sent him away.
What else happened that evening?
I wasn't well. I went to bed early. But when I woke up, the flat was empty. I went outside and I saw that the basement light was on. I went down some steps and my dad was there. Tommy was lying at his feet. He had blood on his head.
What happened then?
Dad, my father, he saw me and he shouted at me to go back to bed. He came running at me up the stairs, eyes all bulging out. And I ran to my bedroom, but later he came in. And he hugged me. And he told me that I'd had a nightmare because I was ill. And that if I told anyone about the nightmare, that I would lose him forever.
When did you remember all this?
When I started doing therapy with Dr. Rawls. And I also remembered that my father sexually abused me when I was 7 years old. And when I told my mother, it stopped.
Thank you. No further questions.
Philippa has her hand over her mouth. Julia sips water.
Prior to the past few weeks, Miss Mortimer, when was the last time you saw your parents?
About a year ago.
Long time. Why is that?
Ever since I was a child, Dad tried to control me.
Did they treat you badly when you were small?
Well, there was the abuse.
Ah, yes, the abuse. That suddenly came back to you while you were moving your eyes back and forth, much like the memory of your father with Tommy's corpse. Did your delusions last year include images of blood or basements?
No, you don't understand.
I think I do. You have always been resentful of your father because he told you the hard truths that you didn't want to hear. And when you heard that Tommy's bones had been found, you saw an opportunity for revenge, didn't you?
No, he did it. That is why all my life he has been there watching me.
That's a good job, isn't it? He warned you off the 17-year-old boy that got you pregnant, then forced you to have an abortion which made you sterile at the age of, what was it? 15?
That's hardly relevant.
What is your point, Mr. Greer?
That Miss Mortimer's life is a catalogue of disastrous relationships. She is deeply unstable.
Mum, I told you what he did to me, and you blamed me! You called me a dirty, precocious little whore! You always took his side!
And there you have it. The sole motivation of this hysterical witch hunt. A spoiled child who resents the bond between her loving parents.
Thank you, Mr. Greer.
Julia slumps. James glares at Vernon, who sits shamefaced in the docks, in the court robing room.
Great. Our main witness falls to pieces in the witness box, so now the jury think she's a hysterical mess, and they'll side with her dad. We've got nothing left, James. We've lost.
James stares pensively.
There's one last chance.
Alicia eyes him.
Vernon himself. He knows why Julia fell apart in the box. He's carried that guilt for 20 years. Imagine what that's done to him. And how's he going to respond under pressure?
Vernon's on the witness stand.
I cared
about Thomas. So much so that you abused him just like you abused your own daughter.
I never hurt her.
Oh, you did, Mr. Mortimer. And you're still hurting her now, aren't you? You saw her in the witness box. It didn't look much like she was gloating, did it? It looked more like she was falling apart.
Mr. Steele's opinions are neither here nor there. If we could just stick to the facts, please, my lady.
You didn't just destroy one family, did you, Mr. Mortimer? You destroyed your own as well. Are you ever going to make it right for your daughter? Or for Tommy? Are you ever going to take responsibility for the damage you caused? The damage you continue to cause? When are you going to be a father again?
Vernon hangs his head. He gazes over at Julia, who's sitting on one of the benches. She stares back at him. He lowers his gaze and hangs his head again. Catherine watches slack-jawed and frowning. Philippa watches him fighting back tears, her jaw tensing. Vernon purses his lips. James keeps his eyes fixed on him. Finally, Vernon looks up.
I sexually assaulted my daughter when she was 7 years old.
Greer gawps.
Went on for 4 months. Julia, she told her mother, who threatened to call the police.
My lady, this is most irregular.
If I ever did it again.
May I ask the jury to retire?
This is my turn to talk.
The jury will hear what Mr. Mortimer has to say, Mr. Greer.
James gapes.
Go on.
I didn't know where to get help. I took work away from home. I approached young boys in toilets, but they were strangers.
Ed Connor scowls at Jeff McFadden.
When Thomas's dad died, all I wanted to do was help. We got close. I came to love him like he was my own son.
Julia watches her father intently.
I made him do things to me.
Philippa's shoulders heave.
For 6 months.
Julia takes Philippa's hand.
In return for treats. He wanted to stop. Said it felt wrong.
Catherine stares miserably.
We were in the basement. He said he was going to tell his mother.
Philippa's distraught.
Tried to get away. It was a hammer. At the boiler.
Philippa shakes violently.
I hit him with the side of his head. Just the once. I didn't mean to kill him. I didn't want to lose you.
He addresses Julia, who looks down.
What did you do then, Mr. Mortimer?
I put him inside the fireplace. Oh, I bricked it up.
My boy!
I'm sorry!
My boy!
Connor slow claps. Philippa clings on to Ronnie, red-faced. Vernon sobs. James glares at Vernon. Ronnie and Philippa walk out of the court onto the rainy street. She carries an umbrella.
Ronnie!
Weasel-faced Jeff.
We got our man in the end.
We?
Ronnie raises his brows. Jeff saunters away, hands in pockets. Julia comes out onto the street. She spots her mother standing alone, a little way along. Sour-faced, Julia strides over to her. Catherine looks at Julia apologetically.
Did you know?
I just wanted us to be a family.
Julia shakes her head, then turns away.
Well, where will you go?
Julia walks off, past Connor, who's smoking a cigar. James and Alicia come out of the court. Julia joins Ronnie and Philippa. Ronnie heads off. Julia gives Philippa a big hug. From a distance, Catherine watches Julia and Philippa talking. They head off, arm in arm. James and Alicia watch them too. They amble off down the street past Catherine. She looks down as James fixes her with a steely gaze. The characters and events in this film are entirely fictitious, and accordingly any similarity between them and actual characters or events is entirely coincidental.